Hi, it's Jo Martin here, the founder of One of Many, and welcome to the One of Many Voices podcast, where you'll meet one of many inspiring women who are helping us to implement our soft power, learning to be ever more effective and ever more fruitful. And today we are speaking to author, speaker, and businesswoman extraordinaire Sophie Bennett. Sophie is an author, book coach, and professional speaker, and was our wealth mentor at our Be Wealth seminar. She's a very active member of the One of Many community and has been a great support to a number of our ladies over the recent months. She's got a fantastically inspiring story as well, because not unlike many of us, she managed to get herself into over £68,000 of debt. If you need to turn that into dollars, out in Aussie at the moment, it's about $120,000. Having no qualifications, no job, and no idea what to do next, she attended a Tony Robbins seminar in 1998 and turned her life around. She built a new career, did her first £1 million cash property deal all within 7 years. It's an incredibly inspiring story, especially for those of us who are really feeling the pinch financially. It's a great lesson in the fact that there is always opportunity and a way to turn things around. From that, Sophie went on to become a writer, and she's been turning ideas into words and words into money ever since. Her clients have included Barclays, Dell, Lloyd, stockbrokers, and even the Bank of England. She even once wrote a speech for Michael Dell, if you don't mind. So as the founder for the Millionaire Author Academy, she helps people unlock the true power of their own story, write their books, and realize their full potential. The one thing I love about her is she's been there and done that in most areas. And her first book about the psychology of wealth was an instant number one bestseller. Money Bondage, Discover the Power of Mind Over Money was a fabulous book and endorsed by Brian Tracy. So she's an incredibly inspiring woman, and we are most grateful to have her on the podcast today. Sophie, welcome.
Oh, Jo, thank you so much for inviting me. It's a real privilege.
Oh, look, it was a pleasure meeting you at our very first Be Wealth seminar and hearing your story and what you're up to and the way you supported the ladies with some really grounded advice. It's just extraordinary. But before all of this, it must have been a bloody hard place to start, £68,000 in debt and wondering what the hell have I done? How did I get here? And what the heck am I going to do? I mean, it must have taken a while to get to that place, did it?
It certainly did. And what was even worse about it wasn't the debt. It was the fact that the debt had come around chasing a dream that didn't happen.
Ah.
So there was sort of a double whammy, if you like.
What was the dream, out of interest?
I wanted to get on the Olympic dressage team as a rider.
Right.
So I'd spent 12, 13 years full time, and anybody that's involved in sport and horses particularly, well, anything to get really good at it, knows that it's not a job, it's not even a dream, it's an all-consuming passion where it's 24 hours a day apart from the time that you're asleep. And even then, I think I was dreaming about trotting down the centre line. So it was a double whammy, really. I had to admit to myself at that time, I was over 30, I was unlikely to make the team, having, you know, been aiming for that over a long period of time. And that debt had accumulated on the basis of thinking that there would be the one big win and the one big horse. And because dressage horses, even then, a good horse could sell for £1 million.
Oh, wow.
So it didn't feel like that much of a gamble when you're on the up.
Yeah.
But when you're on the way back down again, you've lost a sponsor and have an injured horse, and suddenly you think, hey, I need to do something different. I can't actually make my living doing this and chase my dream.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was a pretty tough time.
I bet. And you're kind of a pin-up girl there for the anti-statement of do what you love and the money will follow, because I think that is one of the worst pieces of advice that kind of gets bandied around a little bit, because here you were doing something you were deeply committed to, that was your dream, your heart was telling you to do it, and it doesn't necessarily mean that the money will follow, does it?
Not necessarily. And that was a really hard thing to face, because that was one of those sort of scripted things that I think we're all programmed with, Jo, that follow your passion and the money will follow. And I was walking proof that follow your passion, and if you don't get the business side right, debt can follow.
Yeah, yeah. So what was the turnaround moment for you, Sophie? What happened?
Well, it was that Tony Robbins seminar. I knew I had to do something different. I'd moved to a new place to, again, follow the dressage dream, and was I took an internship at the age of 30, an unpaid internship. So I was working on my internship till 1 o'clock in the afternoon, riding 8 to 10 horses a day. And then I was going out teaching, trying to make my living. And I just burnt myself out completely. I almost crashed my car on the motorway, driving back at about midnight from teaching. I had to be back at the yard again at 6 the next morning. And I was just exhausted. And I knew that I just couldn't keep on. So an advert in the Sunday Times, I took a rare day off. I took what I didn't do enough of. I don't think a lot of us entrepreneurs do enough of, which is actually just take a day off. Take a step back. And I grabbed a Sunday Times, something that I never did. And there was this little advert in the back of the Times for this life-changing seminar. Little did I know how much it was going to change my life.
Wow. So what was was there a wake-up moment? Was there a moment where you just went, oh, my goodness, this is what I need to do? Or did you just know something had to change after that?
I knew something had to change. And when I got back from the Robbins seminar, I did UPW, I think in about 1998, I just knew that I had this different perception that about skill and talent. That was something Tony really got over to me, which was this: most things that you think are talents are just well-honed skills. And I took the idea from the sport that if you can take the time and you're prepared to be dedicated, you can get good at pretty much anything.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was obvious was I wasn't very good with money. So I figured the first thing to do was go and learn about money. So I came back from the Robbins seminar, and on the Monday, I went to the library. I didn't teach that day. I did my intern job and went to the library and grabbed a load of books about money. And I didn't understand a word of it. I knew nothing about investments and nothing about stock markets or property or anything. Because like any sports person, you are totally consumed. You know, you don't even eat a meal without thinking about its nutritional value and its protein impact on your muscles. You know, I mean, it is 24, it's totally consuming. So to step out of that and sort of go to Robbins and meet so many people from all these different walks of life, some with challenges that made mine just look nothing. You know, there were people there who'd been smashed up in car accidents, people who'd lost children, people who were going through the most devastating personal circumstances. And I think that's a very healthy thing as well, especially if you're in a difficult place, is to get out. It's the last thing that you feel like you want to do. And yet you go out and you suddenly your own problems often don't seem so bad. And it gives you a context that gives you a chance to breathe and start again. So I took a different direction and I started a series of businesses. They didn't all go well at the beginning, but I learned a lot from every single one of them.
Wow. And that's a really crucial thing, right? Because sometimes you can feel like you've got to find the one thing that's going to turn everything around, but it never works out that way. I mean, that's the rare story, right? It's for most people, it's the education that's the bit that actually makes the difference over and then finally where the education meets the vehicle is where it kind of takes off, isn't it?
Oh, what a great description. Yeah, my first business was a greengrocer shop.
Really?
Yeah. And who would think that would qualify you for anything? But a greengrocer's shop taught me how to buy and sell.
Right.
It taught me how to negotiate, because I used to trot down to the market every morning in my little van and go and haggle with the suppliers in the morning, because all my margin depended on my negotiation skills.
Right.
I learned how to display things so it was attractive for people. I learned how to get footfall from the street into my shop, and I learned to look after customers, and I learned to compete, because there were 3 greengrocers on my street. You know, it was real dog eat dog stuff. So to stay in business, you had to have the nicest staff, the best quality produce. I learned a lot about negotiation, quality, and just looking after people, I guess.
So is there much difference between haggling over a case of tomatoes versus haggling over the price of a £1 million property?
I would say the property stuff is a bit more sophisticated, only in that there's a lot more components. I know you do property too. So there's a lot more clues, a lot more variables, and I think it's more psychological because you have to find the weak points of the other party and look for the win things as well that you can give them to get the deal done. So I love property negotiation, but it can be quite stressful sometimes because the numbers are a bit bigger than a pound of tomatoes.
So, I mean, you've obviously, you know, been through all sorts of iterations to get to the point now where you're financially incredibly successful and teaching others to be the same and not just teaching each other, other people, you know, the financial side of things, but also how to get their stories out through your book work. Was there any period of time, I mean, you know, knowing now what you do, is there any kind of periods of time during that you kind of wished you could have had the Sophie Bennett version 2015 could have, you know, swept in and just said, it's okay, you're going to get there? Were there any kind of dark nights where you just thought, I'm never going to get there?
Oh, there's been plenty. Mm-hmm. And even quite recently when I sold a property in Guernsey and a small portfolio of property over there, as you listeners may know, the Channel Islands is extraordinarily expensive. There was a big political upheaval about a change to property rules just when we were about to sell the portfolio.
Oh, no.
And that was terrifying because there was, you know, seven-figure sums either way involved. And it was, oh, have I done all this? You know, is it all going to come crashing down? So it's not as if it's a distant memory. You know, I still remember very clearly the stress of it. And I'm starting at, you know, various iterations of this business now. So I'm still testing and risking and trying new things and putting money on the line. And I get a buzz from that, I guess. But I'm fortunate now is that all the efforts from the various businesses, you know, I don't have a mortgage and, you know, I've got my lovely house. And so there is a level of stability, but it's taken an enormous amount of working for an enormous amount of stress.
Mm.
Stress that I think it's healthy not to forget, actually.
Yeah, well, that's probably right. And do you think being a woman has given you any added advantage in that journey or any disadvantages? Or do you think it just, you know, it's the same for men and women when it comes to, you know, creating financial success?
I think we have advantages and disadvantages, but I'd say the same for the guys as well.
Mm.
For me, it feels fairly neutral. I don't feel that I've used my femininity or my womanhood, if you like, to gain an advantage that anybody else couldn't have gained. But on the other hand, I think sometimes it's easier to build relationships in the first instance as a woman.
Mm.
I think we're less competitive and more collaborative, although we still need to learn to compete. You know, there is a world of competitive women out there too, and I think that's a balance that sometimes it's a little hard to find. But it's the one advantage of getting older.
Yes.
that's a bit less terrifying. And, I think we're very good women. We're very good at building relationships that are sustainable.
And how does femininity then, or soft power, as we call it in the One of Many community, how does that feature in your business, if indeed it does?
I think it does definitely feature in my business. And one of the things that people tell me they join me for the book writing, for the Millionaire Author Academy, and some of the marketing things I help people with around that. Because after all, a book is a part of your marketing mix. It's an important part of your positioning. But people tell me it's often my energy that people want a piece of.
Mm.
They hope it's contagious. And I think it is contagious. If you have a natural self-confidence that comes with having survived the knocks and having faced the challenges and not given up, there's a glow about you when you do that and you keep overcoming it. You get this belief in yourself. And people that are at a different stage in the journey are often still a bit wobbly in their own belief. So I think the soft power comes into it there. I think there is a power that an inner power that comes from knowing that you can pretty much knock down most obstacles if you push hard enough.
That's really interesting what you say there, Sophie. Did you have belief in yourself before you got through the obstacles, or did the belief come secondary to the to overcoming the obstacles? I'm interested in your perception on that.
Oh, I wish I could give you a solid answer. The answer is it goes up and down like a yo-yo even today.
Yeah, right. There you go. I think there is this misnomer or this kind of misconception, especially for anyone who's read any personal development or, you know, I mean, Wayne Dyer says, it's not you'll believe it when you see it. You'll see it when you believe it. But I kind of actually tend to think, yeah, in my experience, a lot of the stuff I've done in my life, and I'd be interested what you think, I have done it because someone else believed I could do it, and then it turned out I could do it, and then I believed I could do it afterwards.
Absolutely.
That's just my roundabout way of doing it. I'm like you, my self-belief goes up and down. Would you have a similar experience?
Absolutely. And coming initially from the world of sport, one of the things that's always been accepted is that in sport you need a coach and everybody needs a mentor. It doesn't matter how many gold medals you've won, you'll never see a professional athlete without a coach. You'll never see a player at Wimbledon who doesn't have a coach. You'll never see a professional dressage rider or show jumper who doesn't have a coach. I live just down the road from the Olympic 2012 gold medal winner. We're good friends. We actually did our scholarship together back in the 90s. And they've just come back. They've just won silver at the European Championships. And they don't even ride alone. They ride with a coach there all the time.
Wow.
Because they need that feedback. And it's not to tell them how good they are, because that isn't feedback. And it's not to tell them that everything they do is wrong, because that's not feedback either. A good coach brings out the best in somebody else and has to be there when you get those variables of belief. Because it's human to go up and down in your belief. One day you get a big win. I had a little experiment the other day where I just put something out online and did, I think it was ridiculous, like 25 quid's worth of Facebook advertising around my dressage sport. Because I'm over 50 and I'm quite fit and I'm still competing as an amateur. And I thought, oh, surely somebody else, I'm not the only person with these challenges. And I only spent £25 on advertising because I didn't believe anybody would be interested. But I sort of had this niggling feeling. I had 1,000 opt-ins, Joe. Crazy,
incredible.
Eh?
Wow.
And the sales are well into four figures now already. And I'm just running a little live webinar series for people over 50 who want to get fit to ride. So, it's this... I didn't believe it would work before I did it, so I just put a toe in the water, and then people told me they wanted it, and suddenly I believe, and now I'm running with it. So I think belief is hugely variable. It depends on the context. You need people around you that are honest with you as a coach, I think, who don't just blindly believe in you, but evaluate the quality of each idea and believe in the idea, but always believe in you as a person.
It's so important, isn't it? Do you have family around you who believe in you, Sophie?
I've always had the opposite of that, actually. My family have always, they've been sort of negatively supportive, if that makes sense. My family wasn't blessed with a huge amount of self-belief. And my mum's had several businesses, but had several knocks over the years. So they're always trying to protect me. And the only person that's been consistently positive is my husband, but he does his own thing. And he has his ups and downs too. So very much have had to be quite self-generated. But that's okay. I think ultimately we all need to be anyway.
How do you juggle then your relationship with your husband and your various business demands?
Much better when we don't work together.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? Some people just, I can't imagine being in business without my husband, but I can equally imagine that if he was a different person, I would want him as far away as possible. So
yeah,
I think it just depends on the match, right?
Yeah, it does. We've tried it. We're just two very different personality styles, which works really well in personal life, but in business doesn't work so well. He's very methodical. I'm the sort of star creator on the wealth dynamics thing. And I'm very process orientated as well. I like things planned so that they're automated and things look after themselves. So if it can be automated, I will automate it. Mm. But he works at a different speed, and that just, I drive him crazy because he said that I don't finish anything, but I finish five things at once, and you know, we just drive each other crazy. So the sensible thing to do is go and do our own things.
Oh, I love it. That's fantastic.
And then we have a personal life.
Yeah. And you know, what does that look like? How do you make sure that there's time for that? Have you got special habits that make sure that you spend that time together, or does it occur naturally for you?
Yeah, it occurs fairly naturally because my office is at home. I try not to go out and do too many webinars in the evening. So I try and limit myself to four or five a month in the evening. And we always have weekends together, mm-hmm. pretty much always have weekends together. So, yeah, I mean, we've been married for 20 years, so we've spent plenty of time, and we have been in business together in the past. And for some businesses, it works. Mm. For the property stuff, when we have a project, it really works because he's very practical and he's great on project management and he's great on the building side, and, you know, he can manage a big team. And I'm the creative designer. So some businesses it works and some projects it works, but most of the time we're better off doing our own thing.
I love it. I love it. So when you're looking for inspiration, have you got female role models or other women that you look up to?
Oh, there's lots of people I look up to. I think online, Melanie Duncan does a great job. I love some of the people who are really nailing it online at the moment. Marie Forleo, people who have been able to use and create really good PR are people I watch with great interest, because certainly for the book clients as well, the methods that they're using and how they make those connections are really important for me to be aware of and to keep up with. And the sporting role models as well, of course. There's the lady I bought my house from, interestingly, she's a role model. She's just had her 79th birthday. She's still riding top horses. She's judging internationally. She's out and about, but she also loves her bird watching, has a really balanced life, and she's aged brilliantly.
That's extraordinary.
And I think she rode at the Olympics in 1982. So there's lots of Olympians, a lot of female sportswomen who are role models for me, because there's such dedication involved, isn't there, in sport?
Yeah.
And these days, sportswomen, successful sportswomen, have to be very media savvy. They have to be able to conduct a great interview. They have to be able to write a little bit. You have to be very well-rounded. Mm. So, yeah, lots of sportswomen.
The sports isn't just enough just to be the sports person anymore, not this day and age, is it?
No, absolutely not. A neighbour who's just the current Olympic world record and world record holder, a lady called Charlotte Desjardins, she's just 30. Charlotte's a neighbour of mine, and again, she's just come back from the European Championships, but she's already been on Question of Sport. She won BT Female Athlete of the Year. So she's on TV. She has to conduct herself on TV. It's no longer enough to be able to ride well. You have to be able to dress well. You have to be able to mix well. You have to be able to be good on TV, on radio. Just a competent businesswoman, and you have to run a business around that.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
You have to be much rounder now, I think, as a business person as well as an athlete, than you did in my day.
Yeah, it's very true. Well, Sophie, it obviously hasn't all been plain sailing over the years, and yet you've, despite or because of all of that, achieved a great level of success, and you're now supporting loads of other people to do the same with getting their books out there and turning their finances around. What do you tell yourself when times are tough?
Oh, just keep going and keep listening, because somebody will tell you what you need to hear, but you've got to be prepared to listen. So whether that's a client, whether it's my husband, whether it's a mentor, I always keep my ears open. And I think that can be quite hard to listen to stuff that you don't want to hear sometimes. But the more open you are, the quicker you can make that little shift in direction that can be the difference between success and failure of whatever project. So I enormously rely on people's feedback. And that's not necessarily verbal feedback. just it's a lack of feedback sometimes that gives you the right message, but you have to be prepared to listen to it and keep your eyes open for it.
Oh, I love it. That's some really good advice. Thank you. So Sophie, if someone is wanting to get a book out, if they are wanting to create financial success and get out there and build their business successfully, what would be a really great way to get in touch with you?
Okay, well, people can come on to sophiebennett.com, which is my business website that covers the marketing stuff. And I have an Entrepreneur's Edge newsletter, which I send out every week. People can get that there. And I've also got the Millionaire Author Academy, which is really easy to find. It's millionaireauthoracademy.com. And on there, you can get a series of free videos about writing a book. So I've got a free training series up there for people who are interested in how a book can position them and the magic ingredients they need for a successful book that brings clients rather than a book that just is out there that nobody reads.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It speaks to my heart as someone who teaches speaking from the same perspective. I love it.
Absolutely. And it's all part of the mix, isn't it? And I got into speaking because I'd written the book and I got asked continuously to do speaking engagements. And I figured, hey, that's another skill I need.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, Sophie, listen, it's been great speaking with you today. If I were to give you a megaphone that would allow you to give any message to the young women of the world or older women who are stepping into leadership roles, what is it that you would want our women leaders of tomorrow to know?
You're the leader of your own life, first and foremost. And leadership does not mean being difficult with other people or leading over other people. It means leading by example. So live the best life you can. And if you shine from the inside, other people will follow.
Oh, Sophie, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much for having me, Jo.
This has been one of many voices. I really look forward to speaking to you on the very next podcast coming your way soon. Till then, keep shining.